you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories on our 10th anniversary. Today, you will hear part 2 of Blue Dragons. The Twilight Histories could not exist without the support of our Patreon community. Thank you so much to everyone who has joined recently. And if you haven't joined yet, we're creating a new show inspired by a D&D campaign, and it's directed entirely by our Patreon community. I'll tell you part of the story, end it with a challenge, then ask our patrons what they want to do next. We'll keep this going until you either win the treasure or die, or maybe escape and wander off in this new world. Who knows? It's an open world, and it's up to our patrons what they do. So come on over to Patreon, join our group, and you get to decide. Before we launch into Blue Dragons Part 2, I have a show to recommend to you. I've known Zach Twomley for a lot of years, and he has a fantastic podcast called When Diplomacy Fails. He's just completed his first novel, and it takes place during the 30 Years' War. In Zach's words...
Hello, listeners of the Twilight Histories podcast. My name is Zach Twomley, and you may know me from When Diplomacy Fails podcast, but what you might not know is that I've recently entered the ranks of historical fiction authors. That's right, I now have a novel to my name, specifically Matchlock and the Embassy. Matchlock and the Embassy is the first installment of what will be a rather long series set during the 30 Years' War. I'm really excited about it because there are very few such historical fiction novels set during this period of the early modern era's most important conflict. Before the cataclysmic conflicts of the 20th century, there was the 30 Years' War, which raged from 1618 to 1648 and fundamentally shaped our world. In Matchlock and the Embassy, we follow Matthew Locke in his quest to get to the bottom of the murder of his parents. His mission brings him to Europe, a continent on the verge of total catastrophe and collapse in 1622. To unravel this conspiracy, he must confront his deepest, darkest fears, and also deal with some terrifying figures in black masks, some unruly German rebels opposed to the Spanish occupation, and of course, a wisecracking Irishman. Because why not? I'm very excited about Matchlock and the Embassy because I see it as a great way to introduce people to the era of the 30 Years' War, an accessible window, if you like, to this understudied and underappreciated period of history. I hope you'll check out Matchlock and the Embassy, but until you do, I hope you enjoy this latest episode of the Twilight Histories podcast. Take it away, Jordan.
That was When Diplomacy Fails by Zach Twomley. Subscribe to his show and pick up a copy of his new book, Matchlock. And now, for today's show, Blue Dragons, Part 2, by myself, Jordan Harbour. Look at this one, April says. You've been finding ruins scattered all around the area, but this one is the biggest. It's shaped like a step pyramid and towers above the jungle canopy. The vines and roots crawl thick around the large carved blocks of stone. There are even trees bursting through the cracks. You've been hypervigilant since discovering the remains of an animal butchering site yesterday. You still aren't sure what killed the animal, but you suspect it must be the same creatures you see carved in the reliefs in all these ruins. But why are they ruins? What happened to the intelligent creatures that built these structures? How old do you think these trees are, you say? Which ones? April says. The ones growing out of the pyramid, of course. Hard to say without
dropping one down and counting rings. Give it your best guess. Well, it depends what kind of trees these are. Trees grow at different rates, so again, it's impossible to say. But given how thick these trees are, I'd say maybe 50 or 80 years old. You and April wander around the pyramid, exploring the stone blocks for glyphs. There don't appear to be any on this structure. What do you think this pyramid is for? She says. You shiver. You haven't had the best luck with pyramids. I don't know why pyramids are built, you say. I think it has something to do with connecting with a higher power. They point to the stars. They literally take you higher if you climb them. They give you a different perspective. You're a genius, she says. Huh? You want a different perspective? Let's climb and see where we are. You throw your pack off and tuck the fruit into a crack in the pyramid, hoping to hide it from animals. You and April climb the large stones, using the vines and roots like ropes to pull you up. You look down. The sides of the pyramid are steeper than you thought. A fall, even from a few meters, could break your neck. You worry about April. You're sure she can handle the climb, but it seems an unnecessary risk for your client. It's your job to keep her safe. I can do this part if you want to stay below, you say. Not a chance, she says. You rise through the canopy and enter a bright blue sky. The sun is hot, and the light burns your eyes. The wall of the pyramid is at your back, and you cling to it for safety. There aren't as many vines above the canopy to hold on to. As your eyes adjust, you begin to make out other pyramids rising from the jungle canopy at a distance, about a dozen of them. Let's check the other side, April says. You follow her around the pyramid. Holy demon, mother! What is that? She says. Rounding the corner, you see them. There, rising about a kilometer into the sky, is what look like giant chrome sails. They're huge, at least as tall as a sky city. But unlike sky cities, there isn't a window to be seen in their flawless metallic surfaces. You count five others, far off in the distance, spaced out like the pyramids. Plumes of white clouds appear to be pumping out of their tops. My God, you say, barely audible. I guess we're in the right place. Yes, yes, this is it. She pulls you into a great bear hug and nearly knocks you over. You're a little surprised by this sudden affection. Watch it, you say, and grab a vine. You don't know how relieved I am. This is great, so great. I thought for sure your company sent us to the wrong place. But that beautiful thing. What is it? Cloud factory? Yes, exactly. It's what Venus Farm wants to build. It's an atmospheric regulator. Or at least that's what I think it is. Sorry, it's a what? It regulates the chemical composition of the atmosphere. It keeps everything in balance. If the ozone levels are too low, it raises them. If the carbon levels are too high, it pulls them down. It regulates the chemical composition of the atmosphere, keeping it at a constant predetermined rate. If that's what these things are, it's exactly what I'm looking for. We don't even have to go to Venus now. You think these things can terraform Venus? Venus, or any planet. That's the beauty of it. You can even terraform Earth, like these ones are doing. What do you mean, terraform Earth? Isn't Earth already terraformed? Terraforming is a process that never ends. It's not like you get the atmosphere you want and then you're done. You have to keep it regulated. And then there's always disasters. All it would take is one asteroid strike and the atmosphere would turn toxic, block out the sun. But you set up a network of these, and you've got the atmosphere back to normal in no time. These regulators will keep everything steady and constant, and you never have to worry about your climate again. Your civilization can last millions of years. Aren't you chatty all of a sudden, you say. So, do you Want to check one out?
Yeah.
You set your compass to the closest sail, then follow April back down below the canopy. It's dark, and takes a moment for your eyes to adjust. Within a few minutes, you're on the jungle floor. Your gear, it's gone. Then you remember, you scaled the other side of the pyramid. You and April walk around. No pack, no gear. You find the crack in the pyramid where you hid the fruit. It's at least still there, but your pack. You walk the whole way around the pyramid a couple of times. You search the jungle for at least an hour. Still, no sign of your gear. Do you think it was the monkey rats? April says. Probably. That's really too bad. Never mind. Let's keep going, April says. You sit around the fire, exhausted after a relentless hike, spurred on by April's desire to get to the atmospheric regulator. You're worried about whatever it was that took your pack. Was it the monkeys, or was it something more intelligent? The whole thing creeps you out. Thankfully, you found a lighter in your utility belt, so you were able to light a fire. But your water bottles, cooking supplies, blankets, your flare gun, and 100 other useful items, they're all gone. You have enough experience surviving in the wilderness that you think you'll be okay. But to have your gear stolen by creatures from a different world, creatures that can kill a jungle cat, that gives you the shivers. So, I take it your company isn't just building these things to terraform Venus, you say, trying to get your mind off creatures. That's right, April says. The Colonial Network wants to terraform the planets, starting with Venus because it's so close. Sounds like a waste of money to me, you say. You're feeling tired and agitated, and frankly a bit scared. You're a little surprised by your sharp words.
A waste of money?
Yeah. Well, why not just split Earth? It's already got an atmosphere. Why go to the trouble of terraforming other planets? I can see why you'd think that. You believe in your company's product. Don't you? It takes a lot of energy to jump space to another planet when you can just split to another version of Earth, don't you think?
There will always be a drive to explore space.
But to mine it?
Yes, to mine it. Planets will always need materials.
But it's so expensive to ship them back to Earth. I'm telling you, the Colonial Network is doomed.
You've been reading too many of your own corporate brochures.
Not so. We're talking about a revolution, a disruptive revolution. Like going from the horse to the car. No, the horse to the jet. Look, you could colonize one planet or 10,000 Earths for the same price.
Okay, that may be true, but you're forgetting something. We've already colonized planets. There are human settlements on over 1,000 different planets.
They'll all come back.
No, they won't. They'll grow. They'll flourish. And with our technology, those planets will become Earth-like. Then, with your company's technology, they'll be able to ravage other versions of their planets, while keeping their own version pristine, industry-free, mine-free. You see? You're missing the big picture.
I don't know, you say.
The fire is beginning to cast shadows against the jungle, which moves and sways with life. You shake off the fear and try to focus on April and your conversation.
Let me explain it a different way, she says. You're thinking of it like one point, the Earth.
She picks up a small stone. She places it between you.
When you split worlds, you create another version, then another version, and another version.
She stacks a few stones on top of each other. That's fine, but you're not actually going anywhere. You're staying right on the same spot. You're just stacking that one point. From the side, it looks like a lot, but if you look at it from above, it's just one point. You haven't actually gone anywhere. But now imagine this whole area is the colonial network, and there are thousands of stones. 1,000 planets. With my technology, we'll be able to turn each of those planets into a habitable, breathable world, just like the Earth. And then, we can add your technology, so that each planet is stacking itself, version upon version, just like the Earth. Each of the 1,000 planets in the colonial network can explore and mine and farm infinite numbers of itself. They can take all those resources, infinite resources, and use them to create their own cities however they want. Art, technology, science, totally new ways of being. There are limitless possibilities to create within our own universe. Yeah, I get it, you say. I just don't get why you have to have a lot of rocks when you have the best rock right here. Why not create all those colonies on different versions of Earth? It would be a lot cheaper, don't you think? Because it wouldn't be home. What do you mean? Of course it would be home. It's the Earth. No, I mean, it wouldn't be our world, our universe. Whatever. No, it's not whatever. You've been splitting worlds so long, you've forgotten what home is. If I go to the Pleiades, I can look up at the night sky and see our sun. It's the same sun where everyone I love is. My family, my friends. It's my home. I can see my home. And it's not a version of my home. It's the real thing. This, where we are? This alternate universe? It doesn't feel real to me. It feels strange. Unnatural. It's not home. You get used to it. I bet Columbus thought America was pretty strange. I bet the first man on the moon thought that was strange. That's just because you're not used to it. But it's real. It's just as real as any other place in the universe. I feel I've been ripped in two. Ripped right out of my world. It's a horrible feeling. You nod reluctantly. You remember having had that feeling, though from experience you know it goes away with time. The mind is an incredible thing, incredible at adapting. Home will always be home, she says. Even if it means looking out at the stars and picking out the sun. You're still connected. Visually, mentally. This is truly foreign. I feel like every molecule in my body is itching to get out of this place. It's like standing on water. I can barely stand it. It's so utterly strange. I don't know. I kind of think the opposite. Whenever I've gone off planet, that's when it gets really strange for me. I mean, this is different, but it's still just a jungle on Earth. Same gravity. As different plants, but with most splits you can't even tell that you're in a different universe. Okay, well fine. That's how you feel. But what do you think about the majority of humanity? Do you think they'd be okay living in different universes, or would they be more comfortable sticking to the one that they call home? Surely when you were off planet you looked up at the night sky and were comforted to see home. Not really. First off, I've only ever been off planet in different universes, and I hated it. April shakes her head and looks into the fire. That's just too weird. You went to a different planet in a different universe? Yeah, I've done it twice. Once on Mars and once out in Gliese.
And you went there in different universes, not through the colonial network?
Yep, not a fan.
Why? What happened?
Well, let's see. On Mars, I was stuck in some drugged-up sex and murder cult, and on Gliese, I was paired up with a robot on a yellow swamp.
Sounds like you have a bit of trauma associated with space travel.
You're damn right I have trauma. I spent years marooned on a planet with a killer robot for company.
Do you think that's why you don't like the colonial network?
Well, I didn't mean to infer I don't like it. I just think it's doomed.
Because everyone's going to split worlds instead of explore space.
No, people will always explore space. I just don't think that given the option, people would live on a rock when they could live right here on Earth.
Don't you have family?
Okay, I think I see where you're going with this. Look,
all people really care about is how easy it is to get home for Christmas. For most people, you go off to a colony out in the stars, chances are you're never going to see home again. It's just too expensive for people. But splitting worlds is pretty cheap. You could save up and do it. If you have a family somewhere, wouldn't you want to know that you could save up and visit them once in a while? I'd take that over looking up at the stars and knowing I'm cut off forever. You're missing the point. Didn't you hear me when I said infinite resources? That includes infinite energy. If we get your world-splitting technology out into the colonies, they can mine the resources of infinite numbers of those worlds. That will allow the colonists to live on their planet and travel back and forth to our home world as often as they like. They're still living on a rock with the wrong kind of gravity. I don't think your atmospheric regulators can change gravity as far as I know. I don't know why you keep calling them rocks. There are lots of planets with life. You lived on Gliese, right? Gliese was a nightmare. What happens if the Earth is destroyed? What then? Huh? Where'd that come from? What happens if Earth is destroyed? I don't know where you're going with this, but I guess that's pretty sad for those people. It's our home world, not just any world. It's our universe, our Earth. It's still just one version of Earth. Wouldn't it be sad regardless if any version of Earth was destroyed? Let me answer it for you. If all we do is colonize other versions of Earth, and our homeworld is destroyed, then all the colonists are stranded. They're all trapped in different universes. They can't go back to our homeworld. I think you're stuck on this word, home. I keep hearing you say it like it's a thing, but it's just a concept. Home is just a concept? You've been out in the woods too long. People are very adaptable. You can pick up your roots and plant them pretty much anywhere. If you don't call the new planet home, your grandkids will. It doesn't matter if it's in a different universe or a different planet. For me, I just prefer to live on good old Earth and visit other planets, wouldn't you? I think a lot of people would agree. Well, what if it wasn't just one Earth that was destroyed, but all Earths? What, like the sun died? I'm pretty sure that we're a long way away from that. No, something else. Like war. A virus, maybe. Something that could puncture through all the universes and destroy every version of Earth in one shot. Now you're really getting a little too science fiction for me. What's so strange about it? If splitting worlds is so cheap and easy, couldn't someone just send a bomb through to each one and destroy it? I could do the same for planets. What's the difference? It's harder. You have to add space to the equation. Like you said, it's more expensive. Yeah, and you said infinite resources. Okay, well look, if we're going to be extreme, what if someone destroyed our home universe? Too bad you put all your eggs in that basket. That's ridiculous. I think this whole conversation is moving in that direction, frankly. We should get some sleep. We have a big day tomorrow. You turn over on your back and put your head on a bunch of leaves you gathered for a pillow. You're actually very thankful for the conversation. Talking about science fiction is fun, even if it is a little unrealistic. Most importantly, it takes your mind off of the creatures. You look over and see April still sitting, looking at the fire. "Where's your family?" she says. "What, my real family or the people who brought me up?" "Real. Alexandria. Our world or a different world?" "There is no our world. Stop being so, I don't know, nationalistic about your universe." "So, a different world then?" "Sure, a different world." "Then why are you here? Why didn't you stay in that universe?" Feel a jab of pain in your heart at the thought of your broken family and your burned city. And, of course, Persephone, your beautiful granddaughter, who you left in Alexandria. You feel annoyed at April for making you feel that pain. "It's okay. You don't have to answer." "I'd rather not, if it's all the same. I'm pretty tired." "One more thing," April says. "What?" "You mentioned mining earlier. Do you really want to mine these worlds?" Huh? Do we have to talk about this now? Let me just say this one last thing, and then you can sleep. Jeez, it wasn't long ago that you were telling me to shut up, and now you can't stop talking. She looks annoyed, but shakes it off. You said you don't think we should have colonies on other planets. We should be doing it on Earth. You also said you want to mine these other Earths. Is that right? I don't know, April. Can we talk about this in the morning? I don't think you get where mining is going these days. We're going to destroy whole planets. What are you talking about? They strip the entire surface right down to the mantle. Then they cool the mantle in stages, mine it, and keep going deeper until they mine the core, which is usually the most valuable part. Do you really want to see that happen to all these beautiful paradise Earths? Is this more of your science fiction? No, it's true. That's where things are headed. I've seen the plans. I'm skeptical. How will they do that? Self-replicating mining equipment. They start by using all the materials they mine from the surface to create the robots. Then, once the whole planet is swarming with robots, they dig. Oh yeah? And where do they put all the stuff they mine? They basically turn the planet into hundreds of thousands of asteroids, all sorted by mineral type. The whole process is like a massive sorting system. Iron over here, vanadium over there. But over where? Where do they put the stuff? In space. How? Wouldn't it just gravitate back to the center? The robots build rocket boosters for the asteroids. They're like spaceships, and they can send them anywhere. That's crazy. Is that even possible? Yes, it's happening. I've heard them say they could mine a million versions of a planet and use all that material to build Dyson spheres around a star, completely encase the star and harvest all its energy. Then they'll have enough energy to jump to different galaxies. It's a quantum leap in civilization. A million versions of planets? Science fiction. Well, that's what they said. I heard a real presentation by a real mining company. Now who's reading too much into company brochures? Just suppose I'm telling the truth. Do you still like the idea of them mining the Earth, even if it's in a different universe? No, but there are versions of the Earth that don't have life. They're as dead as Mercury, just rocks. Is that what your company told you? They're going to mine dead Earths? No, they only talked about regular mining. Just finding gold and digging a hole. They never told me anything about dismantling the entire planet. Well, it's happening. It's the next stage. And what do you think, once the technology is ready? Will they only dismantle dead versions of Earth? Or will they destroy whatever world they want? I don't know. I hope they only mine the dead Earths. You hope? There has to be some kind of regulation to stop them from destroying living worlds. I'm sure the government will do something. Which government? Isn't the Twilight Histories based in China, where there's a civil war? Isn't that the whole reason why your company's set up there? To escape government regulations? I thought it was for the cheap energy. It's the regulations. Splitting worlds is some pretty radical stuff. And if you have mining companies coming at you, you can bet they're looking for a free pass to do whatever they want. No government interference. Whatever they want is dismantling Earths. You can bet on that. Maybe not now, but wait and see. That's pretty messed up, April. Yes, it is. Which is another reason why we should be focused on other planets in our universe and not the Earth. As much as I find this place weird, I don't want to see it dismantled. Ah, April, this is depressing. Yes, it is. Okay, I'm done talking now. You can sleep. You've been following your compass through the jungle about an hour when you hear April scream behind you. No, over you. The whole jungle seems to sway, and there's April snared in a net made of vines bobbing high above you. April, you say. You throw the fruit down and run after her. She must be 100 feet above you. April, are you okay? Yeah, I think so. Get me down. Hold on, April. She's hanging from a long, slender tree that appears to have been tied down like a catapult before it shot April into the air. She must have stepped on a tripwire of some kind. The tree is young and the bark is smooth. There are no vines for you to climb. The nearest trees look about the same. There's no way up. You notice your heart is beating fast. The cortisol is racing through your body, and it's tough to think straight. You try a quick breathing exercise to calm yourself. Think, think, you say. A ladder? It would take too long to build one. You don't know how long you have until the creatures arrive. A rope? A vine? She's too high to swing a vine, even if you tied a rock to it. How did the rats get the trees down in the first place? There are howls in the jungle. They sound like a cross between a wolf and a monkey. Could that be them? The howls are answered by other howls. They're coming. Get me down, April says. You take out your knife and hack a notch out of the bark as quickly as you can. You put your foot into the notch and push up. You hack out another notch. It's slow going, and the tree is so high. The howling is getting closer. You lose your grip and slide down the tree. Damn, you say, and try again. The howling is getting closer. You can hear the foliage being trampled. There's no time, no time. You leap down and hold your knife, ready to fight. If you die, so be it. You've lived a long life. Goodbye, Persephone, you say, drawing up an image of your granddaughter's face. I love you, my little girl, wherever you are. The clearing fills with jungle cats. No. They're creatures wearing jungle cat hides. They have colorful belts around their shoulders and waists and hold darts and obsidian knives. In their hands are long sticks that look alarmingly like blowguns. The creatures prowl around, howling and grinding their teeth.
That was Blue Dragons Part 2 by myself, Jordan Harbour. More to come. Come on over to Patreon, where you can join the game. We have a setting, a nasty labyrinth full of death traps. Our patrons have created a character, a bow-wielding Turkish janissary. We have a first show ready for you to listen to. And we have a challenge at the end. We need you to decide what your character will do next. And this one is important, because your decision at this early stage could completely change the entire direction of the story. Basically, and I don't want to give away too much, but your decision now will determine if you are the hero or the villain. And I've given away too much. Head on over to Patreon and sign up to join the fun. You can find a link on the website at twilighthistories.com. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. I'm Jordan Harbour. Until next time, take care.